There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you along. And we will update. I've seen some people on Twitter asking. Had a full conversation with Dr. Bill Williams at the beginning of last hour. We will we'll post that up, too, and have another conversation coming in the next probably couple hours here with Dr. Bill about Hurricane Florence, not because it's any specific issue for us. In fact, it may bring some drier air to the Gulf Coast with its passing going in Thursday, Friday, and then going up the through the eastern seaboard. But this thing is huge. This thing is, you go look, the reason we're paying so much attention, this is a very, very big, or it has possibility of being a very, very strong, maybe even, you know, solid four into a five. So that's why there's so many eyes on this. And Dr. Bill's watching it. Also watching Isaac and Aline and that unsettled weather in the possibly moving into the Southwest Gulf. Should be just a rainmaker for Texas, but we'll keep you up to date on that. All right, say hello to my friend Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, author of Wicked Mobile, and a man who spent his weekend. Did you watch any football? You participate in any of that?
I watched a little bit of football. I watched, actually, because of these confirmation hearings, it was for like a round the clock thing. I only got to see the last 8 minutes of my Eagles on Thursday, but they were the good 8 minutes, so. I'm happy for that. But no, I've been just buried in Supreme Court confirmation hearings.
Well, okay, and tell us what has happened, if you can kind of give us a quick version, since, you know, I think Thursday was the last day for Kavanaugh to be there at the confirmation hearings. It didn't mean they stopped, but a lot of the attention left, right? When the nominee was not there, a lot of the attention left that proceeding.
Right. You know, he testified for 2 days, and then the final day. Of course, the first day was just opening statements. It takes all day long to hear from all of the senators before they even start asking questions. And then the final day was other witnesses. So they had the American Bar Association, and they came in and testified that Judge Kavanaugh unanimously got their highest rating, well qualified. He had some legal scholars. Maybe the most interesting witness was John Dean from the Watergate era, who testified against Kavanaugh. And then you had
why on what merit?
On the grounds that if he were to be confirmed, it would be the most pro-presidential powers court ever, in his view, and also that he fears that the judge is going down the same path as Clarence Thomas and William Rehnquist, both of whom he accused of lying at their confirmation hearings, and thinks that Kavanaugh might be too regarding this issue over the answer that he gave at his confirmation hearing to be on the appeals court a dozen years ago about whether he was involved in the torture policies of the Bush administration.
Can you, to jump back there on this, the executive branch prosecution thing, can you kind of tell us exactly what's at question? We hear it bandied about, but what is his opinion and what is the standard as it sits now?
In terms of executive power?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, he has voiced the view that is really you know, not all that uncommon in legal circles, of the unitary executive branch, which is the Constitution. You know, the other branches are divided. There's 9 justices on the Supreme Court, and there's 435 members of the House of Representatives and 100 members of the Senate. So, you know, power is divided in those branches. In the executive branch, the Constitution vests all power and authority in the president personally. Everyone in the executive branch works for the president. So the theory goes if the president doesn't like the direction of a criminal investigation, he can just order it to end. If he doesn't like a political appointee, he can fire that person. And everyone sort of acknowledges this, but then the question is, well, what if the president might have done something wrong, and you have, say, an independent counsel named Robert Mueller, and Trump wants to get rid of him? Can't he do that? And the existing case law is a case called U.S. v. Morrison, and that is when the now this is the old independent counsel statute that is a little bit different because it was set up by Congress, and it was not an internal special counsel, but it was Judge Starr did this during the Clinton years, operated outside of the executive branch under the supervision of the courts, and the court upheld that and said that's okay. But Justice Scalia wrote a pretty famous dissent where she said, this is a separation of powers issue. You can't have an executive branch official that is not under the supervision of the president. So that's where a lot of the Democrats fears that he'll be, in the words of one senator, a human torpedo to take down whatever Mueller produces.
Yeah, and I want to get into that quote and get into this crippling paradox you write about, but just making sure we kind of understand what's at question here, because there's a lot of rhetoric has been, and we'll call it rhetoric to make it a nice term, has been flying in Washington about this, but and it seems to miss, and you get into this in your story over at Life's Ed, they miss the point that if confirmed, Kavanaugh, who will be most likely be confirmed, will be not the entirety of SCOTUS. He will be one member of the Supreme Court.
Right, and this is the point of my story. The paradox that Democrats face here is that in a chamber they don't control, remember, the Republicans have a majority in the Senate. So in order to defeat Kavanaugh, they have to show that he's not just a judicial conservative that will be part of a 5-4 block. That's kind of a given. They've got to demonstrate that he is so far outside the mainstream of American legal thought that he's unacceptable. But the problem is if they're right about that, and he is so far outside the mainstream that he doesn't support all these precedents on privacy and birth control and voting rights and the whole panoply of it, then he'll be so far outside the mainstream that he won't be able to do anything because he wouldn't be able to get a majority of five to go along with anything. So he'll be writing a lot of dissents in 8-1 cases, I guess. And that's sort of the conundrum. Democrats and progressives are trying to make the case that Kavanaugh is going to take away all these basic liberties of people, take away people's protections from pre-existing health conditions, the whole nine yards. And the problem is, if he's really that extreme, then where does the majority in the court come from? I think more reasonably it's safe to assume that Kavanaugh is going to solidify a 5-4 conservative majority that already existed, and perhaps move it a little further to the right or in a more originalist direction than Kennedy was willing to go. So we'll see more 5-4 conservative votes and fewer 5-4 liberal votes, assuming he departs less frequently from the conservative bloc than Kennedy did.
All right, coming right back, more with Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, author of Wicked Mobile. And we'll continue this discussion. Liberals face crippling paradox in effort to down Kavanaugh. Which one is it? You got to pick one, right?
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
I 120 FM Talk 106.5. Hey y'all, Sean Sullivan, Midday Mobile. Our buddy Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, also the author of Wicked Mobile. Speaking of which, somebody wants to pick up a copy of that page turner. How do they do it?
Yeah, local bookstores, online at Amazon, or other booksellers, Barnes & Noble. You can get it live and in person. You can also probably get it online there as well.
All right, and to continue our conversation here about this crippling paradox you say liberals are facing when it comes to the decision here of how they're going to vote for Kavanaugh. You said you thought the vote in the Senate would come down where? Where's the smart money numbers-wise?
Well, I mean, let's look at the Gorsuch vote. Gorsuch got 55 votes. Or 56, perhaps. There were three Democrats that voted for him. And so I think that's sort of your starting point. I think that every Republican will probably vote for Judge Kavanaugh. I can't understand why they wouldn't. And then you talk about the usual suspects: Joe Manchin, Heidi Heitkamp, Joe Donnelly of Indiana. Those were the three that bolted on the Gorsuch nomination. And it's hard to argue that Kavanaugh is less qualified than Gorsuch was. I think that's where you are. There was an extra Republican, you might recall, in last year's vote, Mr. Strange from Alabama. So I think it really, the only question is Doug Jones, vote to confirm or not?
And talk to us about how kind of the political play there. I think this is interesting for people to understand that we're just guessing right now. I don't know what's in his heart, but Senator Jones may vote yes or no based on how Republicans vote.
I think it's going to be very hard. Like, let's say you had a situation where you had some Republican defectors, and then it came by, so you know, Doug Jones was the deciding vote. It would be very hard for him, I think, to defy the liberal wing of the Democratic Party on that. If he's going to get confirmed anyway, it makes it a little easier for Doug Jones to vote for him and sort of burnish his bipartisan bona fides, which he'll need when he runs for re-election. I don't know. I did a story for Yellowhammer a few weeks ago looking at all Doug Jones's confirmation votes on appellate court judges, and he very rarely voted for nominees that did not have a majority support from the Democrats. Whenever there was a case where there were just a few Democrats who voted for a nominee, he was usually with the majority of Democrats. So based on that, I would say he's more likely a no vote than a yes vote.
Hmm.
And the shame of it is, though, this is just a total departure from the way we've done this for most of our history. Review judicial nominees to make sure they were competent and qualified and could do the job. With the understanding that, ideologically speaking, your judicial outlook on the law, that's going to reflect the president, because the president gets to do the pick.
Okay, I want to make sure, before we get too far past it, agreed, it has been a change in how this confirmation process has worked for the long history of our country, but, it's not brand new, right? I mean, this has been going on since someone came up with the term getting borked.
Right, but it's been on a downhill slide, and it's worse than it's ever been. And I always go back, it would shock people, probably you don't realize it, that Antonin Scalia was confirmed without a single dissenting vote.
Wow.
And that was pre-Bork, obviously. And even Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was after Bork, she had three no votes. So even as recently as the 1990s, there was still strong bipartisan consensus that if the nominee was qualified, they were going to get confirmed broadly. And then the no votes rose in the George W. Bush era for his two picks, Roberts and Alito, and then Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan. They were both got confirmed with votes in the 60s. So you had a majority of Republicans voting against them, but you still had a handful voting for them. And then you get down to Gorsuch, who got almost no Democratic votes. And then you get down to Brett Kavanaugh, who could be confirmed on a straight party line vote, and that's just not the way it's been done. And the more political the court is seen, we do a disservice to the perception of justice.
All right, so this this situation, that this conundrum, right, that the Democrats are in, this paradox is basically by they got to admit one thing to deny another, right?
And
they
can't it's not enough just to rally Democrats against the vote, because they you know, the filibuster doesn't apply to Supreme Court nominees anymore, and they don't control the chamber. So they've got to peel off Republican votes, and the only way to do that is to convince moderate Republicans that Kavanaugh is just a way out there extremist, just far beyond the judicial mainstream, which I think is going to be hard to do based on his record. But if they're right about that, if they're right that he's just chomping at the bit to throw out Obamacare and is going to overturn the same-sex marriage ruling from a few years ago, and that you know, he might not agree with the Griswold decision that said that it was unconstitutional to ban contraception and a whole host of other things. You know, one senator suggested that, you know, he might allow President Trump to strike down any law that he deems unconstitutional, even if the Supreme Court has upheld it. If that's his view, then these things are not going to come true, even if he gets on the court, because you're not going to be able to get four other justices to go along with that. And I'll give you just the one that everyone seems to care about is Roe versus Wade, which, you know, that is a decision that could be overturned. I mean, I think that it could be, but there's all these predictions.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
There's all these predictions that Roe is history. You know, I mean, there's no chance for it. It's going to be overturned. And I think that's far from a foregone conclusion, even if you think that Kavanaugh is prepared to do it. And also, by the way, you'd have to assume that Alito and Gorsuch are prepared to do it, too. They've never actually ruled on it. But let's say they are. I think it's, Chief Justice Roberts has, the way he's run the court has been very cautious. He prefers incrementalism. He doesn't like to take, you know, broad and sweeping actions most of the time. And he seems to have an eye toward politics and worry about the legitimacy of the court and how it's viewed. We saw that, I think, with the Obamacare decision. I just think that it's far from certain, you know, that the Chief Justice Roberts would overturn Roe versus Wade. I think much more likely you would see the court maybe upholding more restrictions than courts have allowed in the past. Under the Casey standard, Planned Parenthood v. Casey, that said you can put restrictions on abortion as long as it doesn't pose an undue burden. And then you had a lot of states that tried to put on restrictions, and judges struck them down saying, no, this is an undue burden. I think that standard might be reevaluated. But I'd be a little surprised, actually, if they overturn Roe.
Yeah, I would, too. I would probably even be further from you. I don't see it happening, but we'll follow that conversation. Just a minute or two left here, and gosh, I wanted to talk to you about the do you see Senator Ben Sasse and his civics lesson that he
did,
you know, obviously did, because you watched all of it. I found that quite refreshing. It sure sounded like, you know, Sullivan and Kirby talking on the air.
Well, you know, I mean, I just and you talk about the panel on Friday, you had all these people testifying on Friday about all the horrible things that are going to happen, that they won't be able to get from the courts. And you had a teacher from Oklahoma, and she described all these terrible conditions in her schools, and they're overcrowded, and they don't have enough supplies, and, Kavanaugh's going to make his worse because of his views on, vouchers. And I'm just thinking to myself, how sad is it that Americans are looking toward the courts to get these kinds of things? You know, this woman shouldn't be going to the courts. She should be going to Congress. That's the legislative branch, or better yet, her state legislature. instead, we're starting to view the Supreme Court as a super legislature, and if we can't get what we want from the elected branches, we'll go to the courts to get it, and that's just not what it's supposed to be. And that was Ben Sasse's point, I think.
We
need to legislate from Congress, and people need to go to Congress to redress these grievances, not the courts.
And it's a great thing that he said it, and you and I have been saying it for years, but it seems like most people on both sides, politically both sides, they're going to, the game's to be played in the judicial branch, so that's where we're going to play it. And it's like we've just given up on the system that was laid out by the founders.
Yeah, and it's a statement, I guess, on the dysfunction Congress and the fact that we're so divided and the fact that, you know, it's hard to pass legislation. It was designed to be difficult to pass legislation, but sort of the abuse of the filibuster rule has made it even harder even to get routine stuff passed. You know, it seems to me not a good idea to bypass that and go through the courts. It seems like we need to figure out a way to make, you know, Congress work better. But if Congress doesn't do something, that's also an affirmative choice. You know, when President Obama issued his executive orders on immigration, his excuse was, well, we gave Congress a chance to act, and they wouldn't do it, so now I have no choice. Well, you know, not acting is the same as acting. If Congress refuses to pass what you want to pass, you got to, you know, elect different congressmen or make a better argument. Not good, you know, not to bypass the constitutional system.
There it is. Brittany Kirby, as always, we appreciate your time. People want to find out more about the book or what you're writing on for Life Set. Where do they go?
You can go to Wicked Mobile on Facebook and give it a like. You know, LifeSet.com, obviously, for the politics, and at Brendan K. Kirby on Twitter.
All right, great stuff. Thank you, man.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Good. Some RL. That's what we needed. Mr. Burnside. 136 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad you're here. Big thank you to Brendan for joining us. And grab some phone calls, too, at 343-0106. Some text here. A texter says our founders were smarter than the politicians we have today. Maybe. Yeah. I would say they were more open-minded, right? They weren't built up with all the layers of old paint that are on top of where we sit today. I mean, it's the frustration, not just in the confirmation process, you know, that's frustrating, but also in the fact that the electorate, right, you have to put the quickest redress of what's going on with the country is not through the judicial branch. It should, well, might be. It should be through the legislative branch. And I link that through that 6-7 minutes from Senator Ben Sasse, and I know a lot of people don't. I like a lot about Ben Sasse. I know some people don't. Well, what he's telling you in that address there about how the system works is accurate, how the system is supposed to work is accurate. So we do it in Alabama too. We don't. People miss the way the founders set up that you redress the way the country's going. The judicial branch should come in every once in a while. But now, okay, prime example. I go round and round with folks about Attorney General Jeff Sessions. And they're like, oh, what's he doing? I'll tell you what he's doing. He's doing, if you want clarity on the law, he's doing the best thing out there, and that is enforcing the law, be it marijuana, illegal immigration. You need somebody to enforce the laws as they're written. And then you get some squeeze, right? Then people go, I don't like that law being enforced. Okay, all right. Then it is the job of the legislature to change that. That is how it works. Just saying, well, we'll let there be a case come up, and then we'll tackle it that way. We'll let it be, you know, it'll come up, and then it'll go in front of the Supreme Court. No, what you should do is, if you don't like the fact that the Attorney General, if you're a marijuana legalization proponent, you should be very happy with what's happening, because the polling is out there shows that more and more Americans don't care about it, okay, or not opposed to it, or whatever. And you could say, all right, then those people will be able to elect people to go to Congress that will vote for laws that legalize it. Or if you're somebody like me that's just kind of into that silly rule of law thing, if you're going to put a law on the books, then you enforce it. You don't let this state kind of do something over here, and this other state kind of, is it a or if it's going to be a federal law and it's going to be on the books, you enforce it. If not, then get it off the books. All right, speaking of conversations with members of our representation in Washington, our own Kelly Finley got on Friday a chance to talk quickly with Senator Shelby. I want to get to that audio here, and it's a discussion of what we talked about with Brendan just a second ago, that confirmation proceedings. You can actually watch this interview on our Facebook page where Kelly has posted it up. You go to facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. Here's that audio.
Senator, great to see you here in Mobile. Tell us about what today was all about.
Today is all about the dedication of the federal courthouse here in Mobile. This has been long coming. This is a very needed thing for Mobile. It's going to be a catalyst for Mobile. But we shouldn't forget what it's all about. This is the Hall of Justice. And there was a big turnout here. We had a lot of judges, had prosecutors, U.S. Marshals, a lot of lawyers, and a lot of citizens. But I think this is a good day for Mobile and also for the Southern District.
And how proud were you when they announced how much money was saved and the project was done ahead of schedule?
I think it's all good. They were using the taxpayers' money wisely, and look what they got. They got a heck of a building.
We're in your office right now. Beautiful.
Thank you.
What would you like to say to all of our voters here in the state of Alabama as we watch all of this greatness happening in our city?
Well, just I think Mobile's on a roll. We want everybody to rise. We want to have opportunities for everybody. We've attracted a lot of jobs. We need to do more. We need to build on our education opportunities for everybody, because the educated workforce is what attracts jobs and creates wealth and happiness for everybody. So we're doing that, and we need to push our infrastructure. Port of Mobile is very important. We're trying to deepen that, because it would create thousands and thousands of jobs, because most of the commerce in the world is moved by water.
And I have to ask you, sir, because I have you here, all eyes are on our nation's capital with what's happening with Judge Kavanaugh. What do you want to say to the American people as we watch this unfold?
Well, I support Judge Kavanaugh. I met with him. I've talked to him. I've looked at a lot of his record. He has an outstanding record as a judge. Some people, I know he's been going through some hearings, but he'll be confirmed, and I believe he will be an outstanding Supreme Court justice, and he'll come soon.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, so there's that conversation from that was on Friday with our own Kelly Finley and Senator Shelby. 142, we can grab some calls here, too, at 343-0106, 343-0106. Yeah, and we respond to some texts, too, that came earlier in the show. When I think it was Bob was on and was talking about pain and all that. What I won't do is go on and say, you know, that I have any expertise in it. I am absolutely just a regular civilian looking at these things. I disagree with Bob. I don't have the science to back it up, but I disagree, just in, I'm sure I can find the science out there. It's not my hobby. This idea that people that have chronic or long-term pain just aren't being cured. Like, the physicians are out there and they're just choosing not to cure it and cover it up. Listen, there may be some physicians that's true. I don't know, but I have friends that are physicians. I know the character of these people, and I know if they had a way to just solve the problem, would just solve the problem and not prescribe people drugs just to cover it up. There are some situations we still don't, as many advances as we've done, there are still so many situations out there that I believe the physicians don't have answers to. And this idea that they're... Now, can you point out, can you send me some link to some physicians somewhere that... Yeah, sure, I'm sure you can. But is it, to use a blanket statement that they're all doing it, I think that's not true. It's not true. A couple different texts on that. And tell you what, we will talk more about this also going forward. I know the Attorney General, Steve Marshall, is going to be back on with us, hopefully coming up pretty soon, talk about what's going on with treatment of opioid addiction in the state. And there's a balance here, and that's part of, and I think it was Carrie last hour that brought it up, and good for her, because we've had this discussion at this level, the nuanced discussion that doesn't seem to, it won't make your nightly headlines. Okay, it's just not going to happen. It's not going to make your punditry stories that make it on your favorite website. But the nuanced discussion is, what do you do to fight a problem? Alabama is absolutely the front lines, right? We're in the trenches of the battle with opioid addiction, as having some of the highest levels in the country. But with that being said, as you fight that battle, are you leaving people, because the pendulum has swung too far the other way, are you leaving people in the lurch who are really, they need the medicine. I mean, they need the medicine to continue with some sort of quality of life, whatever that may be. And then they don't get it. Now, the idea of using different drugs, and if they can get them to work that are non-narcotic and non-addictive, that would be fantastic. I think the nature, and maybe somebody who's a pharmacist here can help me, or somebody who's just a physician, I think the nature of pain killing with a pill, I think those drugs that do it, by the nature, I think the sidecar attached to that motorcycle is addiction, or the possibility of addiction. The body can grow used to whatever the thing is that knocks out the pain. So I don't know if there are drugs that can truly do both at a great level. Maybe there are. You could say there are some analgesics out there, right, that take away pain. If you do it through the aspirin route and all those kind of things, and they don't become addictive. I don't know. I tell you what, I got folks holding. We'll get back to your calls when we return. 343-0106, 343-0106, Midday Mobile, FM Talk 1065.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
At 150, FM Talk 1065 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. By the way, speaking of Monday, it's Sports Night again, the brand new show here with Dalton Norwig, Corey LeBounty, recapping the weekend in sports and looking forward to what's coming up this next weekend. The show tonight, for the first time ever, on the road, going to be at Jersey Mike's. That's happening tonight at 7 o'clock, Sports Night, right here on FM Talk 1065 and out there at Jersey Mike's on Dolphin Street. A tasty place to have a show. I may have to stop by to sample the show and sandwiches. All right, go to the phones, and David is in Mobile. Hey, David.
How you doing?
Doing good. So you got a story here about chronic pain.
Yes, sir. A couple of years ago, my wife was diagnosed with it's commonly called PMR, polymyalgia rheumatica. And it's a chronic disease that is incurable.
Okay.
And she has to take medications for cancer to try to get it under remission. Oh. And she was telling me, I think it was last night, that she was looking online and she seen where Lady Gaga has been diagnosed with the same thing.
Now, is she been prescribed? I mean, is she currently being prescribed a pain medicine, something to deal with it?
Well, she has, but she doesn't take it. She feels like, you know, she's one of the things is she's afraid she'll become addicted, and she doesn't want to take it unless, you know, it actually gets down to the point of her having to. But I mean, she spent days in bed because her legs were hurting her so bad that she couldn't walk, you know.
Now, so this is something she's been suffering from how long?
Well, it was just diagnosed a couple of years ago. It normally doesn't hit people until they get into their either older ages or really younger ages. But my daughter, it's a hereditary disease, and my daughter was diagnosed with it a couple of years before my wife, but hers was dermatitis rheumatica, and I may not be saying it right, but hers also affects her skin and causes redness, itching in her joints, like her elbows or hands or knuckles, things like that.
And so what do the physicians tell you? Because I mean, this goes back to that call from the end of last hour where Bob said, well, they're just not treating the cause.
Bob, and forgive me, but he don't know it, but from my whole background.
Yeah, well, you know what? You're not alone. There's a bunch of people that texted in there, and, you know, I felt the same way, but it's something that, thank God, I'm not living with in my life right now, you know, having to have a loved one like you do suffering right from this. But I know enough physicians that are good people that if there was a way to solve it, cure it, they would ahead and do that. These people are not trying to get everybody strung out on drugs. There may be some example, exactly. Somebody will send me a news story. Sure, there are bad people out there, but physicians I know, if they could solve the problem, they'd solve it.
Oh, in a heartbeat. The thing is, like I said, as of right now, it's incurable. But they can give them medications, the steroid, can't think of the name of it right now, just had it while I go on my tongue, but they can give them things like that, and then there's this type of chemo pill that cancer patients take, and it's basically just to try to get people into remission. And, you know, once you get into remission, and the thing is with this, it's kind of like the commercial on TV about fibromyalgia. You look normal.
Mm-hmm.
You don't look like you're in pain. You don't look like you're hurting. But there's times, I mean, you'll be walking, and you just get to a point to where you're hurting so bad you just can't walk anymore. I mean,
I hate this for you. And here's the problem. David, I said earlier that the pendulum always swings past the place it should be, I guess. Right? For a long time, there was definitely an abuse going on here with these prescriptions going on. But now, here we go, and we're trying to solve that problem. And I applaud the efforts to solve the problem because it's a real issue. But then the pendulum swings past probably the middle point where it should be, where people can get the drugs if they need it, if it's truly medicine.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know what the answer would be. I mean, I have kinfolks that have been on drugs and some that are still are. And so I know that they're abusing them, and that in order to see them not be able to get these drugs would be great. But the fact of the matter is they're going to get something on the street, you know, whether it's this prescribed medication or heroin or opium, I mean, just whatever. But there should be a way that people who do have the chronic diseases should be able to get it.
There we go. I appreciate your story, and the best to y'all with dealing with this. All right, I did get a note from a friend of mine that is, won't say, in the pharmacy business, in the world there, says there are drugs that treat the cause of pain, like muscle relaxers and anti-inflammatories. There are also several types of therapies, like physical therapy, that help as well, but these do not give the immediate relief of narcotics. Most people want the fast result and not the long-term results that are much more practical and achievable. On a side note, in the opioid crisis, I hate being put into the middle of it. I am not a policeman, nor do I have the complete patient medical history to be policing both patients and doctors on narcotics. I am screamed at and threatened every day I go to work because of this. There has to be another answer. Wow. So this friend of mine working in that field is getting screamed at because of it. And that's the point, right? They're a pharmacist. They are not the physician. Physician writes the script or doesn't write the prescription, and then they fill it. I haven't even thought about that. That's a tough situation to be in, for sure. We'll grab one more here, let's go to Sandy and Daphne. Hey, Sandy.
Hey, Sean. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Oh, you're welcome, and thanks for taking it. I just wanted to bring up a situation. First of all, I wanted to, God bless the lady that called earlier on the first hour that brought up the situation with the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a wonderful point that needs to be thought of more. And in regards to that, I wanted to just give you an idea of a situation that my mother goes through. She's 76 years old. She has rheumatoid arthritis. And if you know anything about rheumatoid arthritis or been with anybody that mm-hmm. has it, it's a crippling disease, and yep. It's very painful. She was prescribed pain medication years and years ago. And my point I'm making is that now, since the doctors are just pretty much scared of what the consequences are if they get investigated, she has to take a drug test. Every time she goes into the doctor's office, which is usually around 90 days, she has to be drug tested. And the ironic thing is that if she doesn't have the pain medication in her system, they will not give her a prescription for it.
Because they would be scared that she would be selling it versus just not taking it.
Correct. And she feels so humiliated every time.
Wow.
She's very conscious of the fact that she tries not to take it.
But if she doesn't take it, she risks not having the prescription going forward.
Exactly.
Wow.
It is so ironic that happens that way, and we've drove our doctors to that level that they're scared to do anything.
Sandy, I appreciate your call. Paul Feinbaum's show starts next. Please call back sometime. This is a real angle we need to talk about. Thank you.